On this episode of Roots, Race, and Culture,
let's celebrate the Pacific Islander communities in Utah.
When we first moved here, my dad is like, there's a lot of light-skinned black folks down here.
We all have different stories, and we all are very diverse within our cultures.
And learn about their successes and challenges in Utah.
There's just so many opportunities for Pacific Islanders to thrive here in this state, but there are also many we can give more attention to.
On Roots, Race, and Culture.
Funding for Roots, Race, and Culture is provided in part by the Norman C. and Barbara L. Tanner Charitable Support Trust and by donations to PBS Utah from viewers like you. Thank you.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to Roots, Race, and Culture, where we bring you into candid conversations about shared cultural experiences. I'm Lonzo Liggins.
And I'm Dana Gerald. Thanks for joining us. Today, we'll be discussing the story of Pacific Islanders in Utah, particularly Samoan and Tongan communities. From early migration to today's athletic stars, educators, entrepreneurs, religious and nonprofit leaders, Pacific Islanders are an ingrained part of Utah's landscape.
So where did Utah's Polynesian story begin? What challenges and strengths define these populations? And how has faith, family, and leadership molded this group into forces for change?
To help us explore these questions, we're joined by two incredible leaders in the community. So welcome, ladies.
Welcome, and one of these incredible leaders is Susie. Susie, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So Susie Felch, Malohifo'o, and I'm Tongan. I was born in Tonga, lived there until I was 5 years old. I was adopted to a white family, so I'm what do they call us? Transracial adoptee. When I was 3 years old, my parents worked for the LDS Church. My biological grandfather was the foreman on a coconut plantation. So when I was adopted, I moved from the housing quarters to the main house.
So and that was, you stayed on the island when you
I
were
stayed,
adopted?
Yeah, okay. They worked in Tonga for the church. And then at five, we moved to New Zealand. My dad worked for the LDS Church. And then my older siblings were in college here in the States. And my dad's from Vernal, Utah. So that's where I was raised.
Wow, welcome to the show. What a history. That's great. You've been all over the world.
I know, I love that. And Vernal is its own world, actually. Verona, tell us about yourself.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me here. Verona Sangato Melnga. I'm Samoan. My parents immigrated to the States back in the 70s from Samoa. My dad got a scholarship to BYU Hawaii. That's where I was born. We moved to California, and then from California, we moved here to Utah, and Utah's been home ever since. I am someone who has always been very involved in community and organizing. I'm a small business owner and a lawmaker, and so I'm just a person who really enjoys community and thrives when I'm around people who have the same shared values, and I, you know, just someone who wants good things for the state.
Well, thank you for joining us and welcome. We appreciate your service. We understand you were up late last night doing some lawmaking.
I was. We were in a special session, and so came from there, went home, and now I'm here. Glad to be here.
Thank you. You have a busy schedule. So,
and you're the proud owner of a bakery called Sagato Bakery.
I am. You know, I mentioned that my parents immigrated from Samoa, and so growing up as a way to make ends meet, my parents made baked goods out of our home. And on the weekends, we would take it to the park. They dropped me and my siblings off at Currents Park, and we would sell meat pies and bangi popo and all different sorts of treats from the islands. We now own a bakery and we sell those exact same things. And so from a young age, I learned the value of a dollar and what it means to participate in my family and in my community. And so those are things that have just kept on with me and I think with most of my family as we've continued.
Wow, that's wonderful. So I have a question for you, Susie. Now, Pacific Islander advocacy has taken on a lot of different shapes. And can you tell us a little bit about what motivated you to get involved in leadership and a little bit about PICTAR, your organization?
I just want to give a disclaimer is that what I have to say is Susie's view and life experiences of being Tongan. I think we all have different stories and we all are very diverse within our cultures. First of all, leadership to me more is in a Pacific Island definition, which is service. And I think in America, leadership means you're in the limelight, you're the in the front.
Right.
And I totally am not that. And so I've never really taken the word as leader as me. I'm more in the context of a Pacific Islander definition of leader, which is of service
to our
community.
And so that's a big part of your cultural understanding of what leaders are then.
Yeah, leaders serve in the Pacific Island context for me. And so I came from being transracially adopted. My father was a judge, and I came from a very privileged life. And when I saw my own ethnic communities, like, why aren't they able to have the same things I had growing up? Mm-hmm. And I started making me curious, not just them, but everybody. Mm-hmm. How come they don't have food when you open up their refrigerator? How come this? And I was like, this isn't right. Mm-hmm. That should not be how this country is. Yeah. And so I was like, how come this works like this? What can we do about it? How come nobody's helping us? Well, how about we just help ourselves? And that's kind of where I came from, was like, we don't need anybody help. Our ancestors, we built villages. We took villages on canoes.
Right.
So we got this.
What is PICTAR?
Yeah, so tell us about PICTAR then.
So PICTAR is Pacific Island Knowledge to Action Resources. What I saw when I came to Utah 12 years ago was there was a lot of work being done, but not that was making any action. A lot of education going on. But I wanted to have an organization where people were getting resources and then put it into action. Mm-hmm. And so we named it Pacific Island Knowledge to Action. We're 10 years old. We started out in domestic violence. Mm-hmm. My husband started this, actually. Wow. He wanted to educate Pacific Island men about the American definition of violence. Mm. Very different, right? Because he could see that violence was after he learned what violence by definition, whereas if you grow up in the islands, it's not a thing, right?
Yeah.
It's just...
Well, I mean, from what I understand from some of my Polynesian friends, warrior culture is just a part of their culture, right? Mm-hmm. So that's different.
Yeah. And so he wanted to just like start having conversations with men. Do we like it? Is this violence like working for us?
Yeah.
What's the effects on our kids? And so he just wanted to have this conversation. And now 10 years later, we have a weekly men's support group in the prison and in the community, and teaching skills, tools, a safe place for men just to talk, learn how to communicate, learn how to be vulnerable and emotional, and a safe place for men to talk. And so
that's
how it started.
You know, there's, and I want to say this real quick. Susie was a very outspoken person at the beginning of our show. She was very concerned and protective about how her community was being represented because of the fact that, you know, of course, Tongans and Samoans, it's a completely different conversation, and seeing that through a black lens would be completely different. So when both of you look at your communities, when you look at yourselves, the Samoan community, you look at the Tongan community, when you see it through your lens, how do you see your community through your lens when you, you know, from a perspective of living in Utah society?
You know, I think there are so many different generations of Samoans and Tongans, Polynesians in general, who are living here. I mean, we started migrating here way back in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at things now, I think there was a religious aspect that drove a lot of that migration here to Utah. But now it's so much more than that. I think for a lot of there's your families here, and there's generations of Samoans who have built and laid their roots out here, and people see that this is a great place and a great state to live in. But there's also a lot of economic opportunity and jobs, and Utah's a great place to start businesses. And so now you're starting to see people move here for a number of reasons. You also look at academics and, you know, sports, and there's just so many opportunities, and I think opportunities for Pacific Islanders to thrive here in this state. Mm-hmm. And so as I'm looking through my lens as a Samoan woman, it's actually really exciting to see that people are coming out here for so many different reasons. But I think initially it had a lot to do with religion and the LDS Church.
Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting dynamic there. And you know, it's easy to kind of think that, you know, there's lots of different cultures in the LDS Church. It's a global church.
Right.
It's easy to sort of feel like that can cause a homogenization of culture, right? And so I have a question for both of you. Is there a point, and what was that point, in which you realized your cultures aren't just something to celebrate, but something to preserve? Mm.
You know, I think for me, I've done a lot of work in the community, and Susie brought it up, like so much of our culture is service. And when you think about leadership, we think about serving, and it's always like doing things together for the betterment of the entire community, for the family, right? And so as you're seeing people like do different things and have different experiences now, very diverse experiences as Pacific Islanders, I recognize the values and our culture and all the things that they do. Like when I look at athletes and I see that the drive that they have and how dedicated they are, I recognize that in our Polynesian culture. I recognize where that specific value comes from. Mm-hmm. When I see business owners and I see that drive to just make something out of nothing and work hard day and night for your family, I recognize that from my own household. And even in the state legislature, there's four of us Pacific Islanders now.
Wow.
And we're navigating a very new space. But I see that navigator heart and recognize that from our culture too. And so I think no matter where you go and no matter what you're doing, that drive and that desire to do something good, it comes from that foundation and from these values, family, faith, and God.
What are your thoughts about that?
I mean, right along with that, I think for me is, it doesn't have to be that damn hard, right? And what I saw from growing up in a white world was, how come my people aren't getting the same shake? Mm. Why is this, right? And Verona's right, we have hard-working people.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
But we're not getting the same opportunities and in the same way that other communities are getting it. Mm-hmm. And that to me is sad, and I want to do something about it. I mean, our Pacific Islanders, we will make it happen out of nothing.
Yeah.
We will do it with no help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But does it have to be that way? Mm. It shouldn't be that way, not in this country. And so for me, that's been a lot of my work is like, no, that's not right. And we're not gonna accept it. You know, we've been taught to work hard and that God will provide. And I'm like, yeah, but we're gonna get some help from other places as well.
Well, that's great. And you know, one thing that I've noticed is that there is a strong sense of pride among Pacific Islanders for their culture. You know, I see big stickers on the back of cars and the clothing and, you know, yeah. And I have a great love and appreciation for Pacific Island culture all the way to New Zealand and Hawaii, Samoa, Tonga. Some of my greatest friends here in Utah are from Tonga and Samoa. And I guess the question I have is, how do you maintain that pride and then navigate that need for integration, like you said, to feel like you're not just doing it on your own? Because sometimes people are afraid to reach out to someone from an island because they feel like they're gonna not really be welcome as they try to reach out to that community.
Yeah, I mean, at PICTAR, we started out, we were 100% Pacific Islander. Mm-hmm. Now we serve about 40% non-Pacific Islanders.
Oh, great.
And we say that our programming is based on Pacific Island values. Mm-hmm. God, family, community, service. Mm-hmm. I can never say this word right, reciprocality.
Yeah, that's it.
Reciprocity, I guess is the right way to say that. And collective power, right? If we can learn white people's way when we came here, they can learn Pacific Island values.
Well, wow, that's great.
And Tongans, this is the biggest Tongan community outside of Tonga, correct?
I think it's number four in the, I think the demographics have changed since the census. I think there's more Samoans now in Utah, but I think one in every four Tongan lives here.
Yeah, and the Tonga, recently I was in Hawaii, and the culture of Polynesians differs so vastly from, like, let's say, traditional American white culture. The way they bury the dead, the way they view things, the way the pace of how they move, how they don't take things as seriously as we take them as Americans. Can you tell us a little bit more about the Tongan culture in contrast to, let's say, white American culture?
So remember, because I was raised in socialized white, I had to learn that those things just like anybody else had to outside of the culture.
What was that experience like?
It was really hard and also eye-opening that brought me to this work, because I could see I was just curious of like, why can't every kid go to college? In my world, that was never a question. I was going to college.
Yeah.
Why can't everyone have their own home? Mm-hmm. I don't understand this. And so it was learning how I belong to this culture, and me showing up was really important in how our culture is seen. And being Tongan, I was gonna go back to this, is like the reason for me, we're all the same.
Right,
if you
right,
go back there, we did a DNA, and actually, Verona and I are related.
Oh,
and we would wonderful. Have never known that if we hadn't done the one of those DNA things.
Yeah.
I'm probably related to more Samoans and Native Hawaiians and Maoris, and so I've just come. There's no divide, because if you go back in history, we're all from the same roots.
Right. Yeah, we all draw back. And I'm sure everyone in Utah is related to each other, definitely. That's a foot.
I want to get to you, your question, or what you said, let's just jump in right now. How did that impact your sense of personal identity when you found yourself discovering your roots, so to speak, having grown up and being socialized in a white family, and then saying, I want to know more about my own culture?
It was difficult. I went to college. I think I got jumped. I had fist fight a lot. I had learned how to street fight very well.
Wow.
I was, I didn't speak the language, and people were making lots of assumptions, and I just wanted to be accepted. Mm-hmm.
Into the Polynesian culture.
And so I didn't fit in the white world, and I didn't fit in the brown world. It took me down addiction and lots of other things, mm-hmm. trying to figure that out, till I got to the point that said, I just gotta be me. And wherever that lands, if I stand by myself, I stand by myself. Mm-hmm. But I cannot continue that path that was taking me down to addiction and risky living.
Yeah.
Ended me in felony in jail.
Yeah.
Couldn't do that. So I just decided, be me.
Yeah, so you became stronger in your own personal identity through the process.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, Verona, tell us a little bit about the Samoan culture. I think the Samoan culture, there's definitely a contrast between the Samoan and Tongan culture, correct? And if there is, what is that contrast?
I think there's so many similarities, actually,
it
just across the Pacific Islands. Mm-hmm. And so I think the main difference is, we're two different countries, and people don't understand that.
Right.
We speak different languages. Mm-hmm. And so even though there are so many similarities, there are things you'll see that we do things a little bit different. And I think you brought up funerals earlier. Mm-hmm. The way we have funerals are a little bit different. And in the Tongan, I'm not going to speak for the Tongan culture, but you guys wear a lot of black, and we tend to wear a lot of white. And so there are similarities in how we do things and what the operations of something might look like. But I think, again, if you go back to the root of it, we all come from the same place. Mm-hmm. So we still go back to those same values.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the myths and stereotypes that you feel like you all face in your various cultures as Samoan and Tongan and Pacific Islander? Are there things that you feel like you have to constantly overcome?
I think people just not taking the time to recognize the differences, mm-hmm. to recognize that Susie is a Tongan and that I'm a Samoan, and mm-hmm. to just lump us all in the same group at all times for all things. Mm-hmm. And that happens often. I think people also look to Polynesians and they think about football and The Rock, and they overlook the other great things that we bring to the table and the different values that we bring. And so that's a thing too. And so as we're out in the community and we're serving and people are doing so many different things now, people still want to lump us in this one box and say, you guys are athletes and dancers and you perform for us. But there is so much more to our culture, and those things are all wonderful aspects of the culture, but it's not the only part of our culture.
Do you face any challenges being a Pacific Islander and working with as a state legislator? What are some of those challenges that you feel like you have to overcome in that regard?
You know, I think the main challenge is that there's four new legislators. We all got elected in 2025. Like, we all started serving together. Mm-hmm. And so really it's just navigating that space and being as authentic as we can to who we are, our upbringing. But at the same time, I always go back to this. I think our upbringing and our culture is what makes us great in these spaces. Mm. I think we bring, it's an added value to the state and to this legislature that we bring. And it's something different. And it's a new way to look at things. And it's also an opportunity for people to say, to recognize, like, you're different, you grew up different, your household was so different. But we also align on so many things.
Mm-hmm. I love that we could bring some of those Pacific Islander values into our lawmaking process and hopefully integrate that into the laws of the state. I think the state will be better for it.
And you guys, and I feel, do you feel like you get drowned out a lot in comparison to some of the other racial groups such as Blacks, Hispanics? Do you feel like that your voice is not as loud in that aspect when it comes to the state of Utah, because you are a vital and integral part of our state? As a matter of fact, when we talk historically, we go back to even, we did a show here recently about Yosepa, and there's been entire communities that have been here for a long time. Yosepa was a beautiful community with streets that were lined with these beautiful yellow flowers, mainly, and correct me if I'm wrong, it was the LDS Church that mostly brought a lot of Polynesians to Utah to begin with. But do you feel like you do get drowned out in comparison to some of the other races?
Yeah, for sure. We're not in the history books. We've been here how many years?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
We started Pacific Island Heritage Month. I think we're going in our 14th year, and that was the reason why we started it, was to show that we had similarities, but that we have been giving to this state and our integral part of this state, but nobody was saying. And again, like I said, if nobody else is going to do it, we'll do it for ourselves. Mm-hmm. We don't need anybody's help. We would like it. We are deserved it, because we live in this country that says that they should, because we're part of the community. And so, yeah, I feel like we're not in the history books.
Well, look, let's talk about that history now and educate people. What can you tell us about Yosepa?
You know, Yosepa, as you said, people came here because they wanted to help build the LDS temple or in Salt Lake City. And so a lot of Hawaiians migrated here during that time. Even Samoans and Tongans. My great aunt, Nellie Yosepa, was one of the very first Samoans in this state. She was the first Samoan woman to go to BYU.
Wow.
In Provo. And she came during that time. And so we've had so much history of Pacific Islanders coming to the state and not just migrating here, but doing work that really impacted our state and made Utah what it is. And so
I mean,
you don't hear those
stories, right? The centerpiece of
the
city of Salt Lake City, so to speak.
It's not in the history book. And so it really is up to us to tell those stories. And as leaders in our community, it's kind of up to us now, right, to share that story and to open those doors and to make sure that we're in spaces. Growing up, I never saw anyone who looked like me mm-hmm. on TV, in the legislature, owning businesses. Mm. And so for me to be in this space, I feel so grateful and honored. One of my favorite things about being in the legislature is the elementary students who come up and visit us. And whenever there's Polynesian kids in the group, and I say, does anyone have any questions, the Polynesian kids always raise their hand and they say, are you Tongan? Are you Samoan? And you don't know how grateful I am that they recognize themselves in, you know, one of the highest offices in our state.
I love that.
And I think that's something that Susie probably recognizes as well as we're out in the community serving. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That is so important.
Yeah.
And so I really appreciate that. Thank you.
I'm going to say that we've talked a lot about some of the great things that have happened to our culture, but let me just go back to why USEPA even happened.
Let's do that.
Please.
It's because white people didn't want us in Salt Lake anymore. Mm-hmm. So they gave us land mm-hmm. out in the desert.
Tell it, Susie.
Right?
Tell the
so
truth.
So that's what I just want to say, and part of that history is not so pretty,
colorful.
Right?
Right.
We're going to learn from those things, and I think though that's part of the history that also needs to be told so we learn from it mm-hmm. so it doesn't happen again.
Right.
But because of, what is that disease that they have?
Leprosy.
Mm-hmm. You know, white people started hearing that Hawaiians have leprosy, and they live over here. We were at Warm Springs, which is now the west side, and so the church said, we will take, I think it was 13 men, and say, you pick the places, these are the five places, and they pick USEPA. They were all desert. Come mm-hmm. on now, we came from an island yeah. that was lush, and we're supposed to farm and make, and but they did. Mm-hmm. But they did.
Wow.
So I think, though, I mean, I want to say, like, every football team, high school, college has Pacific Islanders that are getting sponsorship on the back of our young men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I hear them say, oh, but they're getting an education. Really? Are they?
Yeah.
Right.
Are they?
You know, and to give a plug for PBS, we actually did a piece, I believe it was on This Is Utah, about USEPA, where we kind of walked through the history of
yes.
that. It's so important, and I cannot stress this enough, that we understand the origins of, you know, not only just like with black people, Hispanic people, but with Samoan and Tongan people. That we know exactly what happened, how it happened, and the realities mm-hmm. of how it happened. Where are we today when it comes to preserving history? Are we working on doing more stuff to you know, show the people who are making history today? Specifically, you two are obviously making some history right now. Are there other people that you can mention, that you can think of right now, that are making some history in your communities, that are really making some impacts and changes?
Oh, I think there's a list of us.
Yeah. There's so many people, yeah. and they are in every sector, and it's really amazing to see. I mean, we have people in the highest places in the financial world, in tech, in media, and you know, and so. There are so many Pacific Islanders who are really just thriving right now. But there are also many Pacific Islanders who we can give more attention to. And mm-hmm. and I think that goes back to knowing your history and learning from the past, because that history piece is so important. But yes, there are amazing people doing phenomenal things, contributing to our communities right now.
I see an adjustment in some of them that have recognized that they've taken the white success ladder mm-hmm. and that hasn't really worked for them very well. Mm-hmm. And now that where they are, they're now grounding themselves in who they are as a Pacific Islander and recognizing, like, maybe I was drinking the wrong Kool-Aid here for a little bit, and right. now I'm gonna switch over and kind of just re-grounding themselves in who they are and being proud of who they are. One of the things that you asked is some of the deficits. I want to say for me about people think we're violent, mm-hmm. right? That is a myth.
That's a stereotype,
or a stereotype
yeah.
that we're either gangsters or we are football players.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at those two, they kind of share a lot of the same fundamental
yeah.
things
yeah.
when you look at those two items. And so I think that that's something that people think about us. I'm gonna say that we are warriors and we're protectors. We're protectors of God, we're protectors of our community mm-hmm. and our family. Now, if people think that that is wrong, and maybe it's, you know, our groups are about how do we communicate that instead of go straight to the fist,
yeah,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And learning how to self-regulate ourselves. And, you know, that's a lot of the work that we do. I work in the most vulnerable communities. I love that work. I love being in the trenches. Mm-hmm. And so there are a lot of people that are suffering in our community.
And even in chronic health disparities,
yes.
you've worked in that area as well.
As a matter of fact, I want to read a quote that you have. It's from the Deseret News. It says, our ancestors navigated the oceans wide, and our job now is to navigate the systems. And I'm wondering if you can explain how
storytelling, art, traditions, wisdom, and church identity, and you know, build resilience and economic mobility, and how you guys navigate those new oceans?
I think, first of all, you have to know who you are. You have to start there. Mm-hmm. Know what your values are. What are you going to stand up for? What are you going to sit down for? And then learning those systems. You know, what Verona does, what the legislators do, we have to learn those systems before we can do anything about them,
yeah.
Right? And to be effective. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I say we have to learn how to navigate systems for our communities to thrive, because that's the American way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so how do we use our own cultural village? I love that we have four legislators, because I'm telling you, they're probably the only four that really know how a village works.
Mm-hmm. Right.
When people say, oh, it's all about village, I'm like, have you ever lived in a village?
Yeah.
Do you understand? Because
yeah.
You're using that term like you've lived it. These four legislators have lived it, understand it, and they are going to make it a village.
That's
if they are allowed. The four legislators will make Utah a village.
That's great. So tell me then, I want to tee off of that. That's a perfect setup. Mm-hmm. What do the institutions, what do the policymakers need to understand about Samoan and Tongan culture to help bring that village to life for our state?
I think it's really important that we recognize what a village is, mm-hmm. what community looks like. When I decided to run for office, it was because I felt that there was a lack of representation. I believe that the perspective I have as a Pacific Islander, as a woman of color, as someone growing up, you know, living in West Valley and Taylorsville, that was lacking in our legislature. And I wanted to ensure that people who look like me and who share my lived experiences had true representation. Someone who could say, as a bill was coming through, oh, I experienced that. Or I know someone in my family who struggled in that way. And so as decisions are happening, I think it's so important that we understand the people we're serving. And I think that's such a big thing, regardless of what your culture is, mm. is having an understanding and having a desire to know the people you actually serve. And so as someone who represents West Valley and Taylorsville, I stay in my community. I mm-hmm. work with those people. We work together. Like, this is something that we are working towards together. And so I think if you want to be in these spaces, know the people you are choosing to serve and understand their struggles and their wins and their goals and what their family dynamics look like. That's the only way that we're going to get things right. And so to answer your question, I just think that it's really important that we know the people we're serving.
So the institutions, the policymakers, it sounds like there's two things coming out of that. They need to make sure that everybody's represented, mm-hmm. that everybody has a voice, that we're giving the opportunity for the villagers to influence those who are making the rules and doing the hiring and everything else in the village, so to speak.
I mean, they can't do their job without us, mm-hmm. and we can't thrive without them. And so we have to learn to work together, which is to learn how to communicate with each other.
Yeah.
I mean, I look at the state. On the backs of the communities, poor communities, do they go and get grants and go get money? And that trickle-down effect does not work. Mm. It doesn't come to us.
Yeah.
So this state goes out and gets millions and millions of dollars based on our bad health, our incarceration rate,
yeah.
all of the negative things, but it doesn't come to us. That bothers me.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Right? It's a problem. And so, because Pacific Islanders have a lot of these, we're a big part of that. And I tell people, you either gonna help us on the front end and give us donations so that we can help this, or you're gonna give automatically in taxes on the back end. You choose which one it is you wanna give, mm-hmm. right? But we would appreciate the investment in our community before people are incarcerated, before people have chronic diseases, before,
yes.
so we can do the preventive work mm-hmm. that needs to be done. And nobody can do it better than us.
Right.
I get tired of people saying, because I got a doctorate degree from the University of Utah, I'm gonna tell you how to talk to your community.
Right.
Well, I sit down and be quiet. Sit down, right?
Right.
Right. Amazing. I'm a doctor's university student.
You know what I mean? So
I get it.
You know, that's what I'm definitely, you know, that's why I said I tell Verona and she filters it and says it very nice. I don't really know how to say it nice, I just say it. And but with love and concern and not, I think I always used to say to people, if you don't know me, I'm not mad. This is my passion that's coming through, that I want to see some changes, and I want to work with people that have the like mind to let's work together. 80% of the people in this world are people of color.
Yes.
So what if we live in a state that we're not?
We are not the minority.
We are not the minority. And that's what I tell people. Yeah, we may be the minority here in Utah. We're only 25%. But globally, we're 80%. Come on now.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Stand up together. Let's stand up shoulder to shoulder. Let's make the difference in if our ethnic communities, and I'm going to say this, I say to this, the black community that I work with is, do not do to us what others have done to you.
Right.
Right.
We need to stand together, shoulder to shoulder. This year has been a tough year for our communities. The only way we are going to make a difference is if we stand together, let some of that other crap go away, let's focus on the good and the things we want to do, and let's get it done. We don't need everybody. We're good.
And the good is a good
thing. That's a place. Shift gears and focus on the good, right?
Yeah, because, you know, recently, I was on a trip. I went to this country called Curacao. It's right next to Aruba. It's next to Dominican Republic. It's basically a Dutch settled, you know, Dutch colonized island. And the people there are very mixed. You have people that look a lot like me, that look like Daner, that are white, that are just all these different races. And they are very, most of the people there are not racist. It's a very, it's a bizarre thing. You'll talk to some of the people of color and they say, we don't deal with that here. And I asked a woman, I actually, you know, got a video of her and I said, hey, why is it that there's not this, like, you know, hostility among the races and among, you know, whites and these? She said, it's because a long time ago we decided that we're all gonna live together. We all gotta be on this island. And that, yes, they did kind of take the island over, but they realized that we're gonna operate better if we just start working together and seeing each other as equal. And she said, when I look at the United States and I look at how much you guys are fighting and divided with each other, it's confusing to us because we don't understand that you guys live in a country where you should be actually just uniting in order to make things work in your country. And there's very little crime there, if any. Most of the people get along, they all hang out, everybody feels like they're a community. So here's my question for you guys. Here in not just Utah, but the United States, what are some of the good things that people can know about Tongans, about Samoans, so that they can stop seeing these stereotypes? Because we know a lot of these stereotypes represent, but what, 1% of our people? I think like maybe 1% of black people and Tongan people are out there doing this stuff that people are calling, you know, criminal and stuff. Tell us about some of the wonderful positive aspects of the Samoan community. Let's start with you.
You know, I think one of the biggest things is we are so family oriented. Everything, like there's no individualism, and it's really about taking care of each other and loving on each other and making sure that we move together in a way that's beneficial to the entire ecosystem, right? And so I think that we are grounded in things like family and service and faith. And those things are what make our culture so bright and so beautiful. And so you hear about these other things, and that's a very small percentage. But you look at the root of who we are, and we are such a loving people, and we're so, you know, we just love family and we love community. We laugh loud. We love dancing. We love singing.
Y'all are like black folks
music
in many ways.
Yeah.
We thought you were black. When we first moved here, my dad is like, there's a lot of light-skinned black folks out here.
We love food. food is the center of everything, and but when you go back to it, it's always about gathering and connecting.
Yes.
And I think that's what makes us so great. So no matter what we're doing in life, no matter what spaces we're in, we always go back to that space that's rooted in connection and gathering together as a family. And I think for me personally, that's what keeps me centered. No matter what I'm doing, if I'm up at the legislature, if I'm working in business and things get really tough, I know who I am and I know exactly where I come from and I know how good that feels.
Right.
And I think I can say that for most Polynesians.
Yeah.
What do you think, Susie?
What was the question again?
Tell us some good things
about our culture. I mean, along with what Verona said, I would say that faith, when we look what happened with COVID, and this is what I was saying on the governor's committee, was like, we don't care because we got faith. I mean, I would have people say, well, like, I have this little sign that said, stay 10 feet away from me, right? And Polynesians would just go, I don't care. I don't care if I die. I just want to hug you, right?
Yeah.
Because our faith is so strong. We're not afraid of dying. So I would tell, like, you got to come up with something better than that, because if you choose hugging your family member or living in the same house and, like, dying, we'll take death, right? Because we're not afraid, because our family and those relationships are so important. The other thing is, family is not always blood for us.
Right.
Like our neighbors, like in the islands. If you have a neighbor, man, a blood, but they become your cousin. Yeah. Then you find out three generations, oh, my grandma was just neighbors with them. We shared our same litter of dogs or something, and we come up thinking that they were really our blood family. But isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
That you can have any culture, you know, when we have a friend, they become our family member.
Yeah.
Come in and out. I'm sure if you have Polynesian friends, you know, can go to their house, eat, whatever.
Yeah.
We don't see that color, right?
Yeah.
In a negative sense.
Right.
It's just our brother.
Yeah.
It's just our sister,
yeah.
right? And if we have one piece of bread, we all gonna take one bite and we're gonna laugh about it.
Yeah.
And we're gonna be hungry, but as long as we're together, we can survive anything. And I think that that's the beautiful thing about us, is that if there's a challenge, we'll figure out a way to do it, right? And we're gonna laugh, we're gonna have a good time, and enjoy that connection that we have with each other. I had an experience, we had an event, just a few of us were getting together, and a group of Polynesians got stuck in the elevator. And you could hear them singing hymns in the elevator. And the elevator guy came and he said, they're not scared down there. I said, oh, we don't know scared. That's not really in our vocabulary, right? They're like, but they're singing church songs. And so I said, yeah, that's our norm, right? We're bored, we just sing a church song, right?
The faith is so powerful.
The faith.
I go to this Kava bar every now and then on State Street. And when I first started going there, and for those of you who don't know what Kava is, audience people, it's a traditional drink that's drank by.
It's part of the pepper root. It's a family of the pepper root, and they dry it and pound it down, and it has some medicinal. Effects.
Yeah, it's like a nature Xanax, so to speak.
Yes.
But you know, when I'd first go to this kava bar down on State Street, I would just go get my kava drink and I would just start sipping it alone. And they'd say, "What are you doing? This isn't a bar. You come on over here with all of us. We put the kava drink down. We take the drink and we all sit and talk and we commune. We're a part of a community. We're not individualistic when it comes to that way." And that's one of the most beautiful things that I have experienced within the Polynesian communities, is that it is a sense of community. It is a sense of togetherness. And I think the more that we understand that, the better that we can understand our neighbors. And so I'd just love to get your final thoughts. You can't have too much of that.
We cannot have too much of that in this state, in this country, for the reasons you explained. And you know what I want to say, I appreciate something that you said about representation and having these communal experiences, because it really makes me feel good about what we're trying to do on Roots, Race, and Culture. We're trying to provide that platform for people to tell their experience, their truth, help people understand their culture, their community, their values. And so I really appreciate you ladies coming and doing such a great job of representing your own personal story, but also helping us understand your cultures. It is one of the joys that we have doing this.
Yes, and once again, you're making history yourselves.
Yes.
You know, because 20, 30 years from now, you know, people pull back, they look at the community, they're not gonna look at the gang members, they're gonna look at you.
Yeah.
They're gonna look at the people like you who've done some amazing things in our communities. And we'd love to get some final thoughts from both of you.
Yeah.
Unless you got a question.
Well, I have a question about, I know that you do a lot of outreach and community things with your restaurant, as well as, of course, Susie. So how can people support the Samoan community?
Yes.
Can you just kind of give us some final thoughts and help us understand what we can do to help support the Samoan community?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the best ways to support and to get to know the Samoan community is go to the community. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times you see government agencies hold events and it'll be somewhere far on the east side or somewhere where there's not a very big Polynesian community. But if you want to know the community and you want to support the community, go to the community. There's so many events, there's organizations like Alofa Fa'a Samoa, Nuanua Foundation, Nafanua Foundation, Le Malu. Even go to our restaurants, you know, come to my bakery.
Segato.
Yeah, ask questions.
Segato Bakery, ask questions.
To
get to know your neighbors who are Samoan or Polynesian. Go to our churches. But I think the best way to learn and to get to know each other is to go to who you want to know about and who you want to learn about. And our community is so welcoming. You come to our restaurants, you come to our churches, you will be so welcomed there.
Awesome.
For sure.
And where can more people learn about PICTAR?
You can go to our website and learn about us. And for the Tongan community, we have the National Tongan American Society. They're the oldest nonprofit here. I think they've been running 30, 40 years. It's my sister-in-law's, my husband's older sisters that started that. And I want to say invest. Invest your time. Come out, like Verona said, come out and volunteer. There's so much to do. That we can help. And I want to say that even for our gangsters and our, you know, because we're in the prison, they're doing good work and making changes, right? And we've got great reentry things for them. I mean, I have to just make a shout out to C1. He came out a year ago, came out of prison with a job working for the county jail as a peer support.
Nice.
And he just bought his first home.
Yeah.
In less than a year.
And they're
that's success.
They're not throwaway people. People who have been incarcerated. You know, supposedly we have penitentiaries that are supposed to rehabilitate.
Right.
You know, and that's the whole goal of it. But I want to just say one more thing for you. What would be some words of wisdom that your father would say right now?
What would he say? He always just say, just because you can doesn't mean you should, is what's something that he would always say to me. And so just because we can do something negative, maybe we shouldn't. And on the other side is, just because you have money doesn't mean that you need to flaunt it. Give it to somebody that can use it, and invest in communities and people that are in need, especially this year. I mean, there's some people, many people. Today's our food bank at Canon. We run the food bank, feed about 500 families every other Wednesday. We do our homeless work once a month. We'll be at Pioneer Park. There's a lot to be done. Then I would say volunteering your time would be helpful. Mm-hmm. Your talents.
Website?
It's www.pik2ar.org. But I think that's how you get to know the community, come out and volunteer, have lots of laughs, always eat good food, and meet new people.
Awesome.
I say that because Susie's father recently passed, and it sounded like he was a great man, and I just wanted to let him have the last word in the situation.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on, and you both have been just such a pleasure and a treat. And Susie, I think she doesn't hate me anymore. I think we're homies now.
Yes, we
can go break bread at some point in time.
Yes.
So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank
and thank you, Verona.
Thank you for having me.
Yes,
thank
it's
you.
Been a wonderful Wonderful show. So from all of us at PBS Utah, thanks for joining this conversation. As always, other episodes can be found on our website, pbsutah.org/roots, or on the PBS Utah YouTube channel.
And if you have feedback or ideas for other episodes, be sure to give us a shout out on social media. Until next time, for Roots, Race, and Culture, y'all, we are out.
Funding for Roots, Race, and Culture is provided in part by the Norman C. and Barbara L. Tanner Charitable Support Trust and by donations to PBS Utah from viewers like you. Thank you.